Child care advocacy groups from Connecticut and around the country took part in the National Day Without Child Care campaign today. They're lobbying lawmakers to ask for federal funding to help increase the pay for child care workers to alleviate staffing shortages. Meryl Gay, executive director at Connecticut Early Childhood Alliance, says the child care industry can't compete with higher wages in other fields.
The problem with child care is that parents are already paying as much as they can afford. There's not a lot of price elasticity there.
Connecticut lawmakers last week approved $150 million in the state budget for early childhood care. It includes wage supplements for all state child care providers. Happy Monday. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut-New York region. Connecticut's gubernatorial race is going to be a rematch. Abortion rights supporters push for the Women's Health Protection Act and how hospital consolidations are hurting Connecticut's rural communities. Those stories and more to come. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut Democratic Governor Ned Lamont and his Republican challenger Bob Stefanowski are poised for a rematch of their 2018 gubernatorial race. Both men won the approval of party insiders over the weekend. WSHU's Ebong Udama has more.
Stefanowski was the first to get the nod. About 97% of the delegates at the state Republican Party convention at Foxwoods Resort endorsed him on Friday night. Stefanowski says the endorsement gives his campaign the momentum to unseat Lamont.
After 40 years of a democratically controlled legislature, Connecticut is the definition of a failed state.
On Saturday, at the Democrats' convention at the Xfinity Theater in Hartford, Lamont won the unanimous endorsement of the delegates. He immediately responded to Stefanowski.
Look where we were 4 years ago, look where we are today. Now we're talking about tax cuts. Now we're talking about speeding up transportation. 3 years of a surplus. I'm happy to talk about the last 4 years, the next 4 years.
The Democrats also endorsed U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal to run for a third term. The Republicans endorsed former State House Minority Leader Themis Claridis to challenge him. But the two candidates Claridis defeated garnered enough delegate support to face off against her in a three-way primary. Both parties also endorsed candidates for Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, Comptroller, Secretary of the State, and Treasurer. The primary elections for both parties are to be held in August. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut is pushing for passage of the Women's Health Protection Act for abortion rights. This comes as Senate Democrats are set to vote on a bill this week in Washington. WSHU's Mike Lyle reports.
Blumenthal is concerned about the Supreme Court's draft opinion to overturn the landmark Roe v. Wade case that could put Connecticut's abortion law in jeopardy. The renewed fight for abortion rights has exposed cracks in the state's abortion industry. Lawmakers approved a new law that expands who can perform the procedure to fill a potential shortage in providers. Blumenthal also wants men in Connecticut to step up the fight for reproductive rights.
Someone you love has had an abortion or needed one or sought one, and you need to be there to support reproductive rights.
The Women's Health Protection Act is scheduled for a vote on Wednesday. The measure passed the House by a 218-211 margin, but was blocked in the Senate 46-48 the last time it came up for a vote. Mike Lyle, WSHU News.
Pretty soon, Hartford HealthCare and Yale New Haven Health could own more than half of Connecticut's hospitals. More on that coming up after headlines and a message from our supporter.
Support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
the majority of workers for Suffolk County Child Protective Services failed to meet the caseload standards last year because they took on too many cases. In 2020, the county enacted a law that says CPS workers should not manage more than an average of 12 cases a month. According to an analysis by Newsday, close to 60% of caseworkers exceeded that limit in 2021, with 28% averaging 15 cases a month. Officials blame the COVID-19 pandemic, which caused many staff members to miss work. Abuse and neglect reports also rose after students returned to in-person classes, where school officials are required to report their suspicions. Eversource wants to explore divesting in interests in offshore wind in the Northeast. It plans to review its clean energy portfolio to possibly sell its share of the Revolution Wind in Connecticut, South Fork Wind in New York, and other offshore wind projects it has planned with developer Ørsted. Eversource said in a statement that selling all or part of their share of offshore wind leases could be a strategic opportunity for the company. The energy company would invest that money to support other clean energy projects. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority has ordered transit police to patrol trains and stations on Long Island. Data shows major crime on the Long Island Railroad increased by 71% during the first 3 months of this year. In 2021, crime was also up 7% compared to the year before. The MTA has also assigned a police emergency service and canine unit to Long Island to patrol at key stations including Babylon, Mineola, and Hicksville.
This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm J.D. Allen, in for Ebong Udama. Katie Govala is the Connecticut Mirror's first investigative researcher fellow. She joins us to talk about her article detailing disparities in healthcare services and providers in rural Connecticut. Hey, Katie.
Hey, J.D. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. Most hospitals are no longer independent, but instead part of a larger healthcare system. What does the healthcare landscape look like in Connecticut?
In 2000, most of the state's hospitals were independent. Today, that is not the case. Most of the hospitals in our state are now owned by a larger healthcare system. The two biggest ones are Yale New Haven and Hartford Healthcare, which I'm sure folks will be familiar with. And we're reaching a point where Yale is in the process of acquiring three more hospitals from another company. And once that deal goes through, if it receives state approval, Hartford Healthcare and Yale New Haven will own more than half of the hospitals in the state.
How do hospital mergers and acquisitions impact the healthcare services offered to patients?
That is a good question, and there are many answers to it, but the one that I decided to focus on in the story was the way that when hospital systems get bigger, there do tend to be service cuts at the individual hospitals, which, you know, makes sense from the health system's point of view. If you own five hospitals around the state, some of them are pretty close together, maybe half hour, 40 minutes driving distance apart. From your perspective, your system does not necessarily need to have a labor and delivery unit at each one of those hospitals. It doesn't necessarily need to offer surgical services at each one of those hospitals. And so you might make cuts to some of those units to improve efficiency, save some money. And so that does have a big impact for the citizens who live around that hospital who had gotten used to going there for their birthing services, for their intensive care needs.
So when we talk about ICUs and intensive care units, that's mm-hmm. really important in the story of B. Trotta, who you talk about in your story.
Yeah, so B. Trotta has lived around Sharon for her entire life. That's decades. And so she has gotten very used to what Sharon Hospital has meant to the community and what services she can come to expect from Sharon Hospital. And one night in February of this year, her mother started experiencing difficulty breathing and exhaustion, and she was taken to the ER at Sharon Hospital. And when B arrived to meet her there, the staff told her that her mother's needs were too complex to be handled at that facility, and that they could make her comfortable there, but if she wanted the treatment she needed, she would have to be transferred to a different hospital. that was extremely terrifying for her because she had come to expect that, you know, you go to Sharon's ER and most of what you need done is going to get done at that hospital.
Who feels the lack of these services because of hospital consolidation the most?
When you look at rural populations that are most likely to have service cuts, it is disproportionately poor communities and communities with disproportionate populations of Black, Native American, and to a lesser degree, Latinx communities. Those rural communities are less likely to have services in the first place and more likely to see cuts in services.
So how do these hospital systems navigate state regulation and policy that require to keep these services running, or in some cases, stay open altogether?
Yeah, so we actually have quite a robust approval system here in Connecticut called the Certificate of Need process. So if a hospital wants to terminate a service, close a labor and delivery unit, for example, they have to apply for state approval through the Office of Health Strategy. In theory, the way this should work is that they have to apply for approval and they have to wait for that approval before they close the units. That is not how it ends up happening in practice many times. So if we think about the hospitals in the story, for example, you know, Wyndham Hospital, owned by Hartford Healthcare, which has applied to close its labor and delivery unit, it applied in September 2020, but it stopped doing births in June of 2020, and they still haven't received state approval for the official closure of the unit.
So there are other hospital systems that have terminated some services for years without approval through suspensions. Is this a case where a hospital has temporarily suspended something, a service, for an amount of time?
That is a little bit different of a situation because Hartford Healthcare is in the process of seeking state approval retroactively, which theoretically is not the way the process is supposed to work, but they are seeking permission. There are other cases in which hospitals will terminate services for, you know, 2 years at a time, but say, we don't have the intention to close these units permanently, so we're not going to apply for a certificate of need because we're going to reopen them. This particularly became an issue during COVID because in March 2020, the governor signed an executive order that said, hey, hospitals, if you want to shut down certain units in order to make room to treat COVID patients, you can do that without going through this huge state approval process because we know you need to get things done quickly. Then in May of 2021, the governor said, you know, this waiver is now over. So if you suspended services, get those services started back up again, please.
So what can either the executive branch or the legislative branch in Connecticut do to make sure that suspended services get back on track?
This is a hard problem to solve because there are so many moving pieces. But I think one important piece that the legislature addressed just this past session was these long-term suspensions that weren't seeking state permission because they were saying, you know, these aren't closures. So now that the state passed a measure that says, if you are not performing services for 180 days or more, that qualifies as a termination and you have to seek state approval for it. So theoretically, these long-term suspensions should no longer be able to happen.
Katie Golvala is on the investigative team at the Connecticut Mirror. Her article is titled, As Hospital Systems Grow in Connecticut, Rural Patients Lose Services. This is actually the second in a two-part series about the consequences of health system consolidation through mergers and acquisitions from the Connecticut Mirror. Good to talk with you, Katie.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Appreciate it.
I'm J.D. Allen, in for Ebong Udama. Long Story Short comes from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. Read the two stories at ctmirror.org or wshu.org.
And I just want to mention here that this podcast is supported by Hartford Healthcare. For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen anytime online at WSHU.org or on the radio, of course. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing this podcast with your friends. If you like what you hear, you can help us out by becoming a member or making a donation at WSHU.org. That is going to do it for me today. I'm Sabrina Garone, and we'll talk tomorrow.